is a great tool with really truly understanding their business, our business. And we kind of went in as equals and said, hey, we got some business for you. We're interviewing in a sense. Do you want our business? What are you willing to do? We're going to go somewhere else if we don't get the responses we're looking for.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab, where we dissect deals. And with me, I have the Barrys and their partner, Cynthia Hurd. And we're going to talk about a 20-unit deal that they did, and we're going to dissect it step by step. So first of all, everybody, introduce yourselves. Tell everybody who you are, where you're from, and actually how this partnership got started.
I'll go ahead and start. So I am Cynthia Hurd. I actually live in Fort Worth, Texas. And I joined RE Mentor, I guess, about 6 years ago. And I found a property in Oklahoma. It was my first deal, but I didn't have any financing for it. And so we had Don Goff and Jeannie. Dave was also in the program at that time. And we ended up getting a connection through Jeannie and Don Goff. Thought we'd be great partners. And that's how we met in Long Beach at one of the RE Mentor trainings. And he decided to finance the property, and the rest is history. We've been a great partnership.
Hi, I'm Dave Barry. I was blessed enough to be partners with Cynthia. It was put together through Don Goff, like I said, and Jeannie. The idea would be is I'm from Southern California. Cynthia's from Texas. It was a great coast to Central California or Central States. And I live in Southern California, Huntington Beach.
Are you a surfer?
I am not. I'm more the turf guy. So it was more of the football background type of thing. So yes, a lot of friends and family that are.
Chris.
Yep. My dad said bless to Cynthia. I was blessed that I'm his son. I basically was involved inside of the sales and online coaching space, was doing a bunch of different stuff. And just obviously my dad's been investing in real estate for a little while, and I've always kind of been in the background. We've talked about it. But around 2 years ago, year and a half ago is when the conversations became a little more serious of, hey, you've acquired these skills, all of these different things. Would you want to come into what me and Cynthia are doing to help scale, build out systems and everything like that? So around a year and a half ago, we'll say, I entered into the business. We really just started formalizing systems, processes, outreach, acquisition, all that stuff. We're looking to implement a bunch of different technologies just to make it simpler, easier, so we continue to grow the portfolio. And that's a little bit about my background.
That's awesome. So today we're going to talk about your second deal, which was a 20-unit deal. And before we go into how you acquired it, let's talk about commonalities. Commonalities with two out of the three of you. First one is Cynthia. You are the mother of multiples. And I have multiples myself, so I feel your pain.
Thank you.
Chris, we both did undergrad at Northeastern University, which you just recently graduated from.
Correct. Exactly.
You know what? I was on campus not too long ago. And since I was there, they expanded it greatly.
Yeah.
But they don't call it the L Center anymore. But in the quads, not the quad. There's something like in the center of the quad. Do they still call it the quad? All right. So that question is like one of those lingering questions. So tune in next time to find out if the quad is still
the quad.
All right. Well, he'll probably go out and come back in. Talk about the deal. This is your second deal, a 20-unit deal. What was the first deal that you did?
Yeah. Our first deal we did was a 16-door over in Oklahoma also, four fourplexes. That was our first deal. We are able to do this deal. And actually, for more clarity purposes, it is another 16-unit deal for duplexes. So it's eight duplexes that we're able to get on the eastern side of Oklahoma.
Oh, this deal that we're talking about today?
This deal we're talking about today, yes. It is another 16-door.
Okay, cool. So Chris, we left off. Is the quad the quad? Yeah. This is a cliffhanger.
The which one?
Do you know that term, the quad at Northeastern University?
The quad is the one where it's like all of the old buildings from everything. And if you stand in the middle, it's like a crazy echo, right?
It's the one right across the street from the T-stop. I don't remember that echo. I remember smoking a lot of pot in the quad. It's an echo or not. If there was, I probably thought it was my imagination.
Are you talking right in front of L Hall, right there, next to T-stop?
Right.
Yep.
Okay. All right, cool.
Yeah.
So it's still called the quad?
Yeah, they still go the quad. Most people refer it like Krentzman because like there's a couple of different quads. But yeah, not to divert too much. Have you seen the new buildings that they've been doing? Obviously, Isaac, but they have two.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Those are crazy.
So. All right, let's go to the deal. Yep. 16 units, duplexes. How'd you get this deal?
Yeah. So the connection that we had with this is we underwrote another property, a 215-door property over on the west side of Oklahoma. And through the processes of all the stuff you trained us, the questions we had, the professionalism that we had with our property manager, that deal never went through, but we were able to get our property manager suggest and say, come back to us and said, hey, I have an owner that I work with and he has a couple properties. Would you be interested? So this was through a relationship that we created with walking through a property we never got to the property management company.
Oh, that's interesting. So you were going to hire them for that one. And then they thought, well, there's another deal. We can get this one under contract.
We didn't get a relationship. We had a really great conversation, obviously looking through each one of the leases. We did a lot of walkthroughs on each one of the properties and had a great interaction with the property management owner and the team. That deal didn't go through. We turned around and said, hey, we really appreciate your professionalism and how you run this evaluation of the property, and we'd love to do work with you. Within a short period of time, he called back and said, hey, I have an opportunity. Are you interested? And then so he put together one of his property owners and just transferred out ownership and kept management of the property.
Wow, awesome. Yeah, well, that's the opportunity with the management companies because they do see those transfers of ownership.
Sure.
So you just got to let them know that you're looking, the ones that you have on your team. Okay, so Chris, what was the offering price?
Yep. So if you want, I know that Cynthia kind of has most of the information on that. It was essentially $950 was the original price on it. And then we actually ended up getting a little bit more land on that as well. So it came out to a total of $980 because we threw in the land for another $30.
Talk about that. Talk about that strategy. How'd you learn that there was more land involved, and what do you plan on doing with the land?
Yeah, well, this was a learning curve for us because when we originally agreed to everything, it was going to be $950 for, I was like 3.5, almost 4 acres of land. And they said we could build another set of 16 units, another duplexes, duplicate them on the other side. And so we had agreed to that price for that much land. But then there was some confusion between the property management company and the seller. He thought we didn't want the land. So he said that $950 was only for the property and not the land. So we negotiated with him and came back, and he ended up giving us half the land, but we ended up paying $980 for it. He said, I'll give him the land, but we're going to compromise. The price is going to have to go up a little bit. So we had to negotiate through that. And that was territory that we had never bought land before. And we really aren't in the development business. So we weren't sure what we were going to do with that land. So we just kind of kept it brush hogged and thought it would be down the road. It would be a good part of the selling aspect to it, the exit for us.
Did you say you kept it brush hogged?
Yes, we did have to keep it brush hogged.
I've never heard that term before.
That's an Oklahoma thing. It's that big machine. They just kind of brush it all day because the grass gets really high. And when it gets high, you get rodents and critters and snakes. So you have to brush hog it. I'm from Oklahoma. It's a thing. So
what can you do with the land?
Well, we didn't know what we were going to do. We thought about selling it off a couple times, just the land.
How much land is it?
It was almost 2 acres.
Okay.
Close to 2 acres.
Is there road frontage?
Yes.
Okay.
Right on the corner. But before we even had a chance to think about the land, I mean, we sold this property in about 2 years. I mean, we didn't have it long.
Wait a minute. You had 2 years to think about the land.
We were thinking about raising rents.
So you just bought the land without a strategy going in? You paid an extra $30,000 for the land without strategy?
The strategy was, what is going to be the most attractive on a resale side of it? So at that time, being our second deal, we were still in the midst of trying to acquire more. We looked at it and said, for additional extra cost, that's going to be that more attractive to the next buyer. We went in to look at maybe potentially a storage units. This property is only 2 years. We looked at it and had just a lot of open opportunities. Maybe I'm jumping into another question. We got approached by another real estate agent and ultimately said, I'll sell it for this price. Give me your crazy price. And he got it for over the price.
That was at 2021?
That was in 2021.
Yeah.
2022, early 2022. Yeah.
That's what was happening in those days. These crazy people with crazy ideas to spend crazy money for properties. And then people thinking, wow, I'm an alchemist. Everything I touch turns to gold. And then they go out right. And find a deal that doesn't really make sense. And then the crash happens and they got.
Exactly.
So usually if somebody was taking on additional land and paying more for it, either do it for a defensive posture so nobody else takes it, so you know exactly who your neighbor is going to be. And then number two, actually three, I guess the other one would be to be attractive for somebody else when you're going to resell it. And then number three, some sort of an opportunity like storage units, maybe a few more units. Then you do a break-even cash analysis and determine how much value. I know commercial properties, We're always looking to, at the end of these parking lots going roadside, using an opportunity to create like a 20 by 40 pad on there for some sort of, maybe it's food or it could be Jiffy Lube or something. It just adds value. All right. So $980,000. What was the down payment? What was it raised?
We had to put 25% down.
Okay.
And we financed it ourselves.
$220,000 you put down?
Yep.
And you put that up yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then where did you get the debt? Was there any debt?
Yeah. We went through Bank of the West. We did traditional lending. And so we have a relationship with Bank of the West for a lot of properties. I mean, at this point right now, I think we have 8 or 9 different properties with Bank of the West. The relationship was one of the things that we learned a lot, because they came back through and said, if you do automatic deposits through us, we'll give you a credit. We'll give you a depreciation, you know, a cost reduction. And so by the time we got done, there were about almost a point reduction of the traditional lending right now. So if it came through and the property would be, is they underwrote it at 6% and then we're able to get it down to 5%.
By the way, anybody that's listening, that is a really good negotiation tactic when you go into a local bank and you go in and you say, I'm interested in getting a loan for a particular property. And then you talk about the deposits and this property, the revenues are X amount per month that will run through your bank. And they do a times 10, something like that, on how much they can lend on that money and how much they'll make. And you negotiate. They came out and offered you, but you could go in and make that negotiation. I've done that several times with different banks throughout the years, local banks where I knew I was going to be in the market for a good period of time. And I knew they were aggressively out there financing commercial properties.
Yeah.
One of the things that was fascinating that we had the question, we were going back and forth with our agent. At the very end, we turned around and said, hey, are there any other discounts that we're not aware of? And the agent turned around and says, you know what? Hey, I'm really glad you asked that question. Yeah, there is one more. And then we even got a further rate reduction. So the idea would be is these guys, they want your business. If you create some loyalty with them and then you do the deposits, you do the payments, automatic payments through them, they are willing to go ahead and decrease their rates for you.
What was the other discount that you got? Do you remember?
I think we had over at that point, more than 2 million with them. If we had more than 5 million in debt, we had another rate reduction. Yeah. So it was also the amount of money we had in the account before we closed. And so they came back and said, if you have $250,000 of liquid money in this account before you close, we'll give you another rate reduction.
Oh,
if
interesting.
$500,000, if you had $750,000, we'll give you these rate reductions. The question that we had was, so how long do they need to be in there for? Like, what is the money? The money needs to be in the account at day of close.
That's it.
And I said, okay, so what does it mean? How far after? He says, the money needs to be in the account the day of close. So he said the same thing. He says, I don't care if you take it out the next day. It just needs to be there the day of close. You get these rate reductions and we want to make sure we have the relationship. So talking to them is a great tool with really truly understanding their business, our business. And we kind of went in as equals and just said, hey, we got some business for you. We're interviewing in a sense. Do you want our business? What are you willing to do? We're going to go somewhere else if we don't get the responses we're looking for.
Oh, that's exactly right. Because it's a competitive market out there. You've got something very, very valuable to them, which is cash flow. Banks are in need of cash flow and banks make more money off of your cash flow. So that's huge. You don't go to the bank saying, hey, man, can you loan me some money for this deal? Because I really want to do this deal. It's like, hey, I'm going to do this deal. It's got this cash flow. I know what it can do for your bank. What are you willing to offer me for my business? And then you develop the relationship with the bank and then the bank has your back. The best thing about a local bank is they know the properties in the area. They probably either finance them or they know about them. So that you can get some really good insight from the banks when you go to them and say, hey, I got this property. Like, for instance, one time I go to a bank and I said, hey, I got this property that I'm going to be financing. And the banker says, yeah, interesting property. And he says, I ride by that property every time I come to the office. I said, oh, yeah. So you know it well. He says, oh, I absolutely do. He said, 2 months ago, those roofs were brown and now they're black. And I said, yeah, new roofs. And he said, nope, not new roofs. And I was like, he was playing like the Columbo. Remember the old Columbo TV show? He's playing Columbo. It's like, nope, not new roofs. And now I'm like, they're not new roofs. I said, it can't be an overlay because there's already too many overlays on there. So it couldn't be an overlay. He said, you're right. It's not an overlay. They painted the roofs. I was like, what? He said, look a little closer. You'll see overspray. He said, they painted those roofs. And like, I had never, ever heard of that before. Somebody painting roofs. He said, yeah, you're going to need new roofs probably in about 2 or 3 years. And I was like, wow. So that was insight that I never would have even thought of. And the other thing, in a situation like this, where the banks now, they're lending, but they're being very, very careful what they're lending on. You know what I mean? So you get somebody that you have a track record with, instead of just going the regular Freddie or Fannie through different type of intermediaries to get the money. You get somebody that knows your track record and they want you to come with deals because they know you. You're a known commodity. They know how you operate. They've seen the success that you have. So the money's available.
One who's crazy is they're obligated as sales to get money in the field. And they want to make sure their client or their people that get money in the field are going to go ahead and pay the deal. One fascinating thing I'll throw in, it's a little bit of a tangent, but our first property we underwrote, we got the loan for 5%. Years later, the rates were low. So we actually called the bank back. Sorry, Christopher, did I take your...
No. You went exactly where I was going to say. I was going to say on the point of negotiating and taking business elsewhere, I was going to actually ask you to tell the story. That's the reason why I'm smiling, laughing.
Okay.
Go for it.
So Dave, we went back to the bank and said, hey, listen, the rate's not competitive anymore. And they said, what would you like to do? I said, I think you guys need to come back and renegotiate this. I go, I'm going to go ahead and market this deal somewhere else. And I don't want to lose you guys' relationship. What can you do for us? So it happened to be a 5% interest rate. The rates were lower than like 3.5 we could get or close to 4. They came back to us and said, okay, we'll reduce it to 4.5. Nothing, no underwriting, no nothing, just a scratch line item, reduce the rates.
Wow.
So here's what's really funny. I turned around and said, listen, Melissa, I said, we got a question for you. I said, based off of my numbers, that's not really good enough. I said, go back to your owners, go back to your managers. And I go, listen, I'm thinking more 4.25 is the range. And by the way, I can do better, but I want to maintain my relationship with you guys. She came back and said, I've never heard anybody ask that question. No way are you going to ever get it. And they came back and said, oh, well, as long as you have this kind of money in your account, because they needed more deposits, how long does it need to be there for? Oh, just for this time frame. I said, oh, okay, we'll give you 4.25. Awesome. And by the way, this all happened when we were at UP, because I remember being in the hallway, calling up and saying, hey, this sounds really good. I really appreciate telling them thank you, but I'm thinking more 4.25 makes more sense for both of us. So the idea of a big bank, there's negotiations, there's communications. It's a business deal. It's like buying a car. I don't go to the dealership expecting to pay full rate. I want to go ahead and negotiate them down. So it's the same crazy aspect side that we interacted or we felt with the bank.
And first, what was the biggest surprise of this deal?
I think the person that could probably speak to it the best is Cynthia on it, but there was definitely a little bit of a hiccup when it came to monies and closing at the end. And I think that was definitely a big lesson that we learned and something that we're very diligent on in the future. So Cynthia, do you want to expand a little bit more?
Yeah, on that? Absolutely. Because this was only our second deal. And so I'm up in Oklahoma and I've already signed and they're waiting for it to be funded. We weren't real familiar with how things are funded, but we thought it was a right of way thing. Like, okay, they're going to fund it. Well, when they told us they were going to fund everything, we thought they were going to bring our money over too, since our money was in there at the bank. We didn't. And so we fell short of that money and it's coming to the end of the day. And we had to get our money wired over before the end of the day. And the seller started flailing his arms and saying, we're going to pull out of this deal, because we thought all funding happened quickly because our bank is on the West Coast where Dave is. So Dave's running back and forth trying to get wires. And even the bank's funding, because we're on Oklahoma time, they're California time, they wanted the money instantly. And it didn't happen instantly because they don't do their wires until like early afternoon California time, which is nearly closing time where we are. There was foaming at the mouth. It was a crazy afternoon. And we learned a lot for bank lending, especially the bank we were using. We know their system now when they fund. And when we funded the next couple of properties, again, everyone was all frothing up. And we just kept saying, it will be here at this time. Trust us, it will be here. And it fell in right on time. That was a bit of a learning curve for us with just how banks fund and how it takes time. It's not instant.
You don't know what you don't know until you start doing these deals. You can train yourself and train yourself and train yourself, but until you step into the fire.
I have to say one more word of wisdom is always walk every unit. They don't always want to walk every unit. They're like, we'll just show you. And this was an A property. They're like, we'll just show you a couple of them. Dave, do you remember, when we walked through and one of the bedrooms was like half taken up with a marijuana growing system? I mean, the vents, the lights. And I'm like, what is happening in this room? And she's like, I grow weed. And I was just like, what? Now, this has been all bills paid. It could have cost us greatly. Now, luckily, she was paying her own electricity, but the things you find when you walk every door.
Oh, yeah, you definitely have to walk every door. In the larger complexes, there's always security issues. There's always a cat person. Sometimes there's a hoarder. So yeah, you got to walk every door. You got to see where the water issues are. So you note them and then you'll save money instantly by fixing those right away. So yes, by the way, I mentioned that I used to smoke pot on the quad. I stopped smoking pot when I was 19 because it made me really, really paranoid. So was it legal to grow it?
Medically, it's legal, but we did make the decision to say, yeah, because she kept talking about it's for medicinal purposes. Like, honey, you must really be sick. Half her room was growing pot. It was for selling purposes. And we said, I don't think we're good with this. So
yeah, then you need to find a reason to evict them. You can't say it's because you're growing pot, but you just find some other reason.
I think we found another reason, right?
Yeah. All right. I want to end this podcast by asking you, what is the most influential thing you've read in your life for the last 6 months? So whoever has one, go first.
Go, Chris.
And you said read, correct? Like as in a book.
Yeah. Or listen to.
There's a couple of different books that I think have been super influential in my life. Obviously, when people ask me for different book recommendations, it'll depend on what skill are they looking to acquire and stuff like that. So for me, I would say there's two really, so I'll kind of split them. One is How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think it is such an important thing for people to be able to effectively communicate their thoughts, their ideas to other people. And when you really master communication, understanding how to deal with people, it really changes so much. So that's one thing. And then another one that I'd say, this is maybe a little different one. It's obviously a very famous one too, but Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. For those people who do not know who Marcus Aurelius is, he's one of the greatest Roman emperors to ever live. And essentially what he would do every single day is he had his own journal. And at the end of every day, he would write down what he learned from that specific day, his own self-reflections. This book was never intended to be published. It was just him as arguably the most powerful man on earth at the time, because how big the Roman Empire was and all of that, having his own self-reflections. And then what happened after he died, these different journal entries, let's say, were then published together into a book. So I think it's very fascinating because you're able to see the self-reflection of such a extraordinary, powerful, and great man. And he's doing a very analytical and truthful, I guess you say, self-reflection with himself. And there's a lot of really great things you can pull from that.
There's a lot of life lessons in that book. Dog-eared and highlighted all throughout. Cynthia, yours.
Exactly.
So I heard Ed Milet speak about a year ago.
Yeah.
And he really resonated with me. Last year, it was another event and I saw him speak and he's just amazing. He's so inspiring.
But you were your insiders, right?
Yes. I'm super excited that he's coming. And I loved his The Power of One More. It's a great book. I listened to his podcast. He just has so many little nuggets to help motivate you and just help you surround yourself with the people that you need to push you. He's really great.
That was actually at our Insiders Club. He came in for about a half an hour and did a little presentation there prior to coming to Ultimate Partnering.
Yeah.
So Insiders Club is a networking group that I formed last year. What do you guys think of Insiders?
Oh, it's great.
It's been huge for
us. It's been wonderful.
It's awesome. Yeah.
So if you want more information on Insiders, call over to Robert Poser at the office, I believe. Dave, Ed Milet is awesome. Like I follow him.
He's wonderful.
He's fantastic. One of the books that we put together for our team is Traction. So Gina Wickman is the entrepreneurial organizational system. So as that's kind of, I think, one of our most influential things that we're doing together as a team. So we're all reading the same book. I've been doing that EOS Traction aspect side for my business for multiple years. And so we're going to go ahead and try to implement that with all our property management companies, try to get everybody on the same page, rowing in the same direction, and really kind of deep dive focus on really, truly what are the issues that matter. There's lots of conversations that arise. They're not the most important thing we need to talk about. So the question would be is carve away all this minutia and the noise, and let's get to the real issues. We don't have much time to talk, so let's make sure we do it with the most focus.
So, Chris, why don't you share with him, you met two of my sons at Insiders Club, and they're wanting to come into the business. So, Chris, tell them the great book that you forced them to read.
Yeah, I did. And that was actually one of the things. Absolutely. Yeah? It was one of the things. I think it's really important whenever people ask for book recommendations, and I know we got to start wrapping up here, Dave, so I'll keep it quick. But I think that based on what you're looking to learn, going to the right spot is really important. And me, when I was actually looking to start learning more about real estate investing, I'm not just saying this to kiss your ass, Dave. I genuinely mean it. Multifamily Millions just opened my eyes in the way that you communicated the ideas and made sense. Because I had done a little bit of research, listened to Bigger Pockets. But the way that you put it in that book, it just completely opened my eyes. And so Cynthia's two sons who just graduated from high school are looking to get into the business. And that was the book that I told them, look, like, you got to read this if you really want to get a strong understanding of the space, how to get involved and everything like that. So that's definitely one that I very highly recommend when it comes to learning real estate investing on that.
Yeah. That book is a foundational book that's kind of timeless. I wrote that book in 2008 after emerging real estate markets as a sequence because emerging real estate markets sold so well. So it's like, all right, this is the strategy. Now tell them how to do it. And multifamily millions. That is just a journey from my soul, from how I get started and all the different challenges that I face, how I got through them and how I move forward. The next book is actually called Multifamily Moneyball. That'll be out in the fall. And it's all about the five key strategies of wealth creation and how to stack them to create extreme wealth through my 20 plus years of experience now. Multifamily Millions 2008, I probably had about 12 years experience when I wrote that book. And now this new book, I got 12 more years experience and I added it in there as well. So, all right. So that is another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. Thanks for listening. Forward this episode to a friend and listen to the next episode.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.